I was absolutely blown away because none of the C-level people that appeared in my DMs were liking or commenting any of my posts. They were all like lurkers. And so at face value, I get why people are hesitant because they're like, oh, my buyers aren't there and they're not paying attention and they're not reading this stuff. They're many times they're there. They're just not putting like raising their hand in public, but they'll slide into your DMs to say it. So I think it's massive.
Yeah. It could also be they're trying to avoid awkward conversations. They're like, I'm not ready yet, but I'm just kind of checking this person out. Good evening, good afternoon, good morning.
Hey, how you doing?
Superb, fantastic, sassy.
Love it. Here for this energy.
Yeah, I've been snooping around in the digital bushes and zooming a whole bunch of your content.
Oh, nice.
I feel like you have almost like a, you know, double whammy uphill battle because it's like, one, people have like this weird sort of association with sales and salesperson. And then the second one on top of that is emails. It's like, oh, no.
I've always loved a challenge. So what are you going to do?
I don't know. I found that really funny. And even how you talk about those things and share them very openly, I think it's really helpful.
Thank you. I feel like, you know, as a salesperson for so long, it was just, you're constantly inundated with like, you're doing this wrong and you're doing that wrong and you're doing this wrong. And it's like, nobody's fucking perfect. We all learn selling by screwing up. So why don't we just talk about that stuff instead of acting like the all-knowing? So I hope I keep that. I don't ever want someone to look at me as like judgmental.
I mean, out of all the different salespeople that I follow on LinkedIn and stuff, your comment section is probably the funniest.
Oh, thanks. It's very low bar on LinkedIn. It's not very funny there. So I do it there. I don't think I'd be so funny on Reddit or TikTok, but LinkedIn's a good place.
Yeah. So why don't we start with who is Jen? What does she do? And how many pets does she have?
Yeah. And we're recording. Like, we're going.
We're already recording. Yeah.
Oh, this is so fun. Okay. So let's start with the most important part. I have technically 6 pets. So 4 dogs, all rescues, 1 cat, and 1 ferret. So if that gives you any idea of like why I'm working out of a co-working space, there we go. What I am, what I do, I now sell basically speaking services. So people come pay me to come in and talk to their sales teams and give them different ways of thinking about how to create more pipeline, how to stop losing so many deals to status quo, how to get like really complex buying groups to come together and agree on literally anything at all. And so that's the vast majority of how I spend January through March is just traveling around, talking to sales teams, trying to get them to think differently.
That is amazing. By the way, I love the ecology of different species that you have.
Where it gets problematic is one of the dogs wants to eat the ferret. So we've got to keep a really close eye on that. But otherwise, everybody gets along in the farm.
In the evenings when you walk into your house, David Attenborough playing in the background.
Like the Lion King soundtrack is going off. It's really a beautiful thing.
Of course, you recently, I think, quit your job. And the funny thing is that I did see one of those posts where you were like, I'm going to go out on my own. I'll put this, by the way, in the show notes and put your website. You know, the first big headline is actually, you don't need a motivational speaker at a sales kickoff. I think that's so interesting that you're like, you know, I actually go do speaking engagements, but your headline is you don't need a motivational speaker. It's almost like, in fact, it's funny that Tony Robbins is doing like a Time to Rise live conference right now. And he's like, I'm not your guru. This is almost like in line with that. So do you want to talk a little bit about what the sentiment here is?
Yeah. So I think as someone who went to 18 SKOs, one of the biggest things that was frustrating for me is when I'm at a sales kickoff, I always want to know, like, what are the best reps doing? How do I fix whatever I screwed up last year? And as fun as it is to listen to a motivational speaker, so like someone who hiked Mount Everest or won an Olympic medal, like, don't get me wrong, I love listening to those stories. The problem that I felt with it, though, was just like, okay, I listen to it, I leave, and I'm still like, how do I write this damn email? Like, how do I close this deal? Like that, I want to work hard towards it. I'm motivated, but I just don't know what to do differently. And so part of it was just my own personal experience of where I felt frustrated with how the time was spent. But the other part, too, is if you look at me, I am not your classic keynote speaker. I've never written a book, not an Olympic athlete. I've never climbed more than like three flights of stairs. And so I knew that I had to create a wedge of where and how people would look for me and think of me. And so kind of positioning myself as the non-motivational speaker allowed me to carve out a wedge in a really crowded, much more experienced space.
I mean, that headline speaks to you're really like problem aware versus being solution oriented or focused. In fact, I saw I don't know what color those pants are, fuchsia or I don't know, some gradient shade of pink.
They're supposed to be lavender.
Lavender. Paul. Oh my God. Right. Duh. Paul. I didn't do your homework.
They don't look at them. I'll give you credit. They don't look at it in the picture.
Okay. Those are the funniest colored pants I've ever seen. That's a really great segue to kind of get into like, what is the 101 of sales, but using email as your medium? Again, if you want to sort of go into different tentacles of like how to translate that into like social media, because I'm guessing for you, you generate a lot of leads through social media itself. So it would be helpful for the audience listening who are service-based business owners who are trying to do lead gen, get in front of their the right buyers or customers. What are some of the step A, B, C, D we can start, you know, unpacking for them?
Yeah. So let's first and foremost think about what makes it hard to be a service provider, right? Like, let's say I'm selling a piece of tech. I can hold up a shiny piece of tech and be like, look how sexy this is. Do you want to see more of it? When we sell a service, there isn't any of that, right? And so it's almost a forcing mechanism that we have to think about. How do I articulate the problem that my service solves in such a way that someone steps back and says, man, that is exactly what we were just in a meeting talking about. Like, this person seems to understand my problem without even talking to me. So I want to talk to this person more because I bet they know more, right? So I think high level, where the misstep that I made a lot in my career when I looked at cold email was I looked at cold email as I've got to pitch my service as being the best damn thing since sliced bread. I got to make it sound so, so good that people are like, just here's my calendar. Like, when are you free to meet? But if we step back and we look at it from a buyer's perspective, that is how like 99% of sellers approach cold email. So from a buyer, if I look at my inbox, everybody thinks they have the best things in sliced bread and everybody's trying to convince me of it, right? And so it's like, I learned to tune that out. And so the sort of fundamental philosophy of how I think about cold email is very different to how I grew up learning to cold email, which is don't use it to sell your solution unless you've got a reason to know that like this person has intent signals or this person has reached out asking for a demo. Like then go ahead, like sell your solution. But for everybody else who didn't ask you to contact them, they don't want to be pitched. What they want to do is they want to feel understood. They want to learn about problems as they evaluate and come to a decision of what they think they should solve for and what they think they can hold off on solving for. And so my approach to cold email is very much, let me prompt a problem. And if someone looks at me and says, man, that's exactly the problem that I face, the odds are they're going to be open, if I get that right, to hearing about my solution. So don't put the cart before the horse. Like that, I would say at the highest level, is like my strategy with cold email. And then we can break down like tactics if you want.
Yeah, I think another thing that might be helpful is, and this might sound like a really dope, like dumb question, but I'm sometimes surprised by like just the basics of not. So yeah, it would be helpful to sort of learn how to even know what your what's the problem that your client's facing.
I had a really tough love manager. And I'm so grateful for him because he taught me so much about selling. And one of the things he taught me on this specific question was never come into my office and ask me for help on a deal if you cannot tell me what this company sells, how they sell it, who they sell it to, and how they make money. Because if you don't know the answers to those four questions, you are not thinking like a buyer. You're thinking like a salesperson who sees an opportunity and you're trying to force a fit. And so the very first thing I do at like the most 101 level is I will pull up that company's website, their investor presentation. I'll Google like the CEO or founder's name plus podcast or interview. And I'll seek to understand like, what is it that this company first and foremost does? How do they make their money? All the questions I just shared. But then I try to put myself in their shoes and say, what do I imagine would be hard in pursuit of those goals? So classic example, like I've never sold a piece of manufacturing equipment in my life. Like I don't look like I did. I never have, like never been in that. I'm not blue collar gen though. I've always sold to them. But I can still, as an observer, go in and say, okay, if this company has always sold manufacturing equipment, but now they seem to be making a shift towards selling like aftermarket services. If I put myself in the shoes of a seller in that business, I can imagine that that would probably be hard going from a physical product to an intangible product. And so if I'm selling what I sell, which was, you know, sales training and sales services, I can use that as a hypothesis to say, I might be totally off. I don't know a damn person on your sales team. I've never sold what you sell. But I got to imagine it's probably pretty hard to go from something you can touch and feel and show someone to something that you can't. Like, am I wildly off base? And so I think, and I'll wrap up with this, I think the thing I was scared of before is making an assumption or building a hypothesis and being wrong. But what I neglected to realize is like, by showing that I'm thinking, I'm putting effort into thinking, what might be hard about this for them? That's a behavior that buyers love because it shows you're thinking about them, not yourself.
Well, I love that. I think there's another thing that you sort of ran past is, and something we can sort of wrap up this conversation with, is in a thing where you have like this shiny thing, there's like some proof points. You can qualify that thing. Whereas in a service-based business, I'm sure there's different ways to qualify and build credibility, trust. Right. And I don't want to spell the beans at all. I'm going to leave it to you to do that. But I'm sure there, so we can add that. But I would say for somebody who has a service-based business, the first thing is do the research. Like you said, you know, look up what the CEO is saying, read their annual report, go to their website, find out what's happening. How do they make money? Think about their business like a business person. Next step is then once you do that, then you can begin a hypothesis of what the problem could be. Okay, so now what do we do? I know I have done my research. I know what the problems could be. Jen, what am I doing next?
Yep. So now we are going to basically think out loud in our email. So what I want that person.
Oh, I love that, by the way. Think out loud. Oh, I love that. That is okay.
Thanks.
Yeah, okay.
Hyping me up. So I want to think out loud because I want someone to see why them, why now, why us. And so What I love to do in a cold email is make the very first line or the preview text that they see when they're like scanning their inbox, they haven't opened it yet, something about them, an observation about something they're trying to achieve. So I might say, you know, I heard yours, and I wouldn't say it this way, but let's say here's what I found. I found a CEO talking about how they were landing all these enterprise logos and they were really proud of it. Okay. So I might look at that observation and say, if they're talking about it publicly, and all the case studies on their website are mid-market companies, that tells me that maybe they're trying to make a shift up market. So the email itself would start with, noticed Jane, your CEO, talking about the 10 enterprise logos you landed last quarter. Not I noticed, not I was reading your annual report, not I was listening like a creep to your CEO on a podcast. Like, they don't give a shit where we learned it from. The important thing is that we're able to pull in a relevant observation. So that's piece one. And then piece two is where I'm introducing what you just said, which is my problem hypothesis. So what might make it hard to land more enterprise accounts? That's where I'm bringing in from a service-based business. My insight is from talking to other customers that we've worked with around what I typically see makes doing that job harder. And then the third piece is social proof. Not social proof like we worked with Acme and we drove a 4,000% ROI because every seller and their mother does that and it's become white noise, but rather to say, I worked with Acme and one of the things that they found hard was deciding, do I do this or do I do this? And the do I do this's are not buying your product. It's like the step that comes before buying your product, the thing that they have to really decide before they decide to move forward on a solution. And then lastly, with a call to learn, not a call to action. Because I think what most executives do is they scan their email. If they see that like calendar link, if they see the ask for 20 minutes, they're like, I know what this is, without even looking at the whole email. And so the call to learn is like, am I off base? Am you know, interested in hearing a little bit more about this? Is this something you're running up against? So to sum it up, like my job of a cold email and structuring it that way is to try to seek problem alignment, because people who have problems that our solution solves for are great candidates for sales calls. We just tend to put the solution before the problem.
I think there's another piece here that could be helpful is, you know, in these, of course, larger organizations, unless, you know, if we're talking like mid-market or somebody thousand, I think thousand is probably pretty small, but who would be the right people to even email? How do you even know who am I going to reach out to? Am I reaching out to multiple people, sending them a similar message? Like, how do you think about that?
That's a really good question. I used to make the mistake of only emailing the decision maker. Well, guess who checks their email and is most open to email? Like probably the least is the decision maker. Now, I'm not ruling them out for that because not every decision maker operates the same way. But one of the things I wish I had learned sooner is when we think about that problem hypothesis, we can often validate that by having a below the line conversation. So like, again, I'll take what I used to sell. I'm selling sales training. I could make a hypothesis sitting in the comfort of my own home of what might be going on. But how much stronger is my hypothesis if I call up a sales rep on the team and I'm like, listen, I'm in sales. I'm not trying to sell you anything, but I'm looking at your business and I'm trying to decide if I should even pursue it. And one of the things that would just be helpful if you've got a second to help me think through is like, when is the last time you even had sales training? Did you just get in onboarding and then you haven't had it since? Are you doing your own sort of development thing, right? Like, I can make some sort of, you know, estimated guesses. So it's not just a massive open-ended question. And it's a very simple, low effort answer. No, I haven't had any since I joined 2 years ago. Okay, cool. Now that just gave me so much more confidence and validation in my message. And I'm not just going to email the CRO. I'm going to email the sales leaders, the, you know, first line managers, but each of those messages is going to be slightly different because their relation to the problem is slightly different. Like no sales manager at a large enterprise is buying a sales methodology, but they are responsible for executing on. They are very opinionated around which ones they love and they hate. So I can take that information and use it to strengthen my message back up to the top.
Oh, I love that. It's you're sort of building business intelligence, but you're also considering, you know, who might eventually become your champion sponsor versus influencers who might be like, but no, we don't want to.
Exactly. And that's the key. Like you don't want to use those BTL calls to put the decision in their hands. And that's a mistake I made. It's like, great. Well, do you want to take this somewhere? And then I'm like, now I got to go over their head. Like I'm an asshole. I don't want to do that. It's like, you're just looking to validate current state so that you have less of a leap of faith on your problem hypothesis.
I've had that pain point, I think a couple of times as well, is you might know someone at a company and they're like, hey, dude, I'll totally, but then you're kind of stuck with them. You can't go over their head. So how do you, let's say if you know somebody versus maybe the other assumption is that this is your first point of contact and they're the person to respond. So maybe how would you respond in those two different situations?
Yeah. So I think the key is when we give someone a solution to socialize, it is really screwed up if we then go somewhere else and be like, well, let me give it to you to socialize too. So it's what we are asking them to socialize. So my preference, regardless of the situation, is that I'm having a problem discussion first. Nobody owns a problem discussion. Somebody owns a solution discussion. But if I frame it correctly and say, look, people don't buy solutions to problems they don't have. As an outsider, it looks like this and this is happening. I might be totally off. Can you help me understand, like, what am I missing as an outsider? And then all that person doing is having a freaking human conversation with me around, well, what you don't see is this, right? And then I can leave that conversation judging by the way that they talk. Are they using a lot of I and me? Are they using a lot of we and us? Like little signals like that tell me, is this one person's point of view or is this someone that's really clued in to what's happening big picture in the business? So I don't have to put anything in the hands of that individual. As long as I frame it as, I'm simply trying to understand, is this even a problem worth solving? And it might not be, right? And I have to go into those conversations with that expressed statement.
So let's say, you know, given all the first few steps, if somebody responds with positively, how do you prepare for those conversations? How do you show up?
So this is why I like writing emails the way I do, because half or more than half of my preparation is already done, right? I've done that preparation in advance of that meeting by writing a really focused email. And I think that's what a lot of people miss about cold email is writing is thinking. And by clarifying our thinking up front, now I have to do less on the front end of going into that call. That said, I'm not going to research everything before I write a cold email because that wouldn't be a great use of my time. I know that there's a problem that I'm going to teach to. The other things that I'm doing are I'm looking at, like, has this person ever worked with us? Has this person that like made a significant leadership change? So there were times when I would find someone who moved from like ops to sales or finance to sales. And I'm like, you can go into that knowing, all right, this person's going to be like super process oriented, super numbers oriented. They're not going to appreciate like the more creative stuff of the sales process. So I'm looking for that. But then bigger picture, I'm also looking at the company and its competitive set. So what I mean by that is I think most of us know to look at a company's 10K or annual report if they have one and just like read up on it and get smart. But what I like to do is I like to look at this year's annual report and last year's annual report. And I like specifically to hone in on the CEO letter to shareholders and say, what was the CEO promising talking about prioritizing last year? What are they prioritizing talking about this year? What's missing? And then go back into the results from last year and say, why is it missing? Is it missing because they hit it, they exceeded it, and we're on to bigger, better things? Or is it missing because we didn't get it right, right? And now we're trying to like shift our investors to look elsewhere. So that's on the organization. But then bigger picture, I want to do that with their competitors too. And the reason I do that is because I have put my foot in my mouth plenty of times chasing companies and then not recognizing like they're actually the market leader and everybody else is following them. So when I talk about these pains, it doesn't relate to that because they're like, we're in front. We're not worried about that stuff. So that context of where that company sits within their competitive set also helps me understand are all three of their main competitors also looking to move up market? Are all three of their competitors also releasing a solution that sounds very similar to them? Now I can start to, again, make some deductions around what is that CRO likely caring about? What are they worrying about? If they're bringing a product to market and it's like, who can get there fastest and how do we make ours sound different?
Okay. So hold on. there's so much to unpack and very little time. So I have to be very smart about this. Okay. Maybe just for a quick hot second, we can talk about typically how much time do you spend up front on any specific client that you're going to be reaching out to?
And the upfront part of how much time am I prepping to write the email, it does vary, right? So I will spend, let's say I've always had like a multi-industry, I've never had like a single industry sector I sell into. So that does create a lot of like context shifts and I have to sit down and be like, all right, now I'm thinking about a manufacturer versus now I'm thinking about financial services. So as a result, that will take longer, right? But what I find is like, let's say I spend 30 minutes looking into a business. I don't spend 30 minutes on every single email, but what I then do is say, okay, what other companies that I would anticipate have a similar need state to this, can I now repurpose this email for? And it might not even be in the same industry. Like if a traditional product-led company now introduces an AI service, is that really any different than a manufacturer, like a tech and a manufacturer? No, they're solving for the same problem. So I don't mind investing 30 minutes up front because I know I can get scale on the back end of it. So that's up front. And then for the call itself, another 30 minutes. And some people might look at that and say, like, what a freaking waste of time. But to me, if an executive is going to give me 30 minutes of their time, like I should at least spend 30 minutes of my time having a genuine curiosity about their business. Because regardless of where that conversation goes, I am now smarter on that industry, that persona, all of that, which I can then take and use elsewhere. So I look at it kind of as a long game.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. You can parlay all that learning into the next client. That's fantastic. So the only one quick hot thing I had was, of course, email, we'll come back to it in just a second. But how much does, for a business owner, social media and LinkedIn play a role? Like how could they optimize that thinking that they're applying in emails into maybe their content strategy?
Yeah, so this is something I wish I had jumped on sooner. I'll admit, like, one of the quote that really got me that totally reframed my perspective on this came from Josh Braun. And it was a quote he wrote a long time ago, and it said, social media is like a 24/7 salesperson. It's always on. And I was like, damn, that is like, that's powerful. I like that. So the way I think about social, like at this point of my, you know, evolution social, almost all of my leads come from social, which is a great place to be. It's very low effort. But the reason that is because I'm essentially taking those problem assumptions, problem hypotheses, and I'm putting them out there, right? And so that allows someone to opt in and say, what you said about this hit home, because that's exactly what we've got going on here. And that is someone who's already probably on social to learn. And so when I was at my last year at Challenger and I was the chief evangelist officer, and that was all I was doing, just evangelizing the problems we solved, I was absolutely blown away because none of the C-level people that appeared in my DMs were liking or commenting any of my posts. They were all like lurkers. And so at face value, I get why people are hesitant because they're like, oh, my buyers aren't there and they're not paying attention and they're not reading this stuff. They're many times they're there. They're just not putting like raising their hand in public, but they'll slide into your DMs to say it. So I think it's massive.
Yeah. It could also be they're trying to avoid awkward conversations. They're like, I'm not ready yet, but I'm just kind of checking this person out.
Exactly. Like, I'll give you a perfect example. One of the, there was a 7-figure deal that I sourced for another AE on the team. And typically a 7-figure deal for our business would take a year or longer to close. This one closed in 3 months. And when the guy came in with like 1,000 sales reps, he came in saying, I want to be upfront. I don't know that I want to buy a sales methodology. Like that's not at all on my radar. But what I do want to talk about is this problem. And so that's where we can earn a lot of trust is by being like, cool, we don't have to talk about a sales methodology. Maybe you don't even need one, but let's talk about the problem first. But as we shape their perception of the problem in that process, we're shaping their perception of what they think they need for a solution. So it's a real sneaky way to get in there, which I'm a huge fan of.
I was actually going to talk about something else, but now that you said this, I want to hold on to this thing and go down this path for a second.
What's that?
And this is something that you posted very recently. It's like, and you were talking about cost of interaction, but within that you were saying, is this the right problem to solve right now? So you want to speak to that a little bit and how people get that wrong?
Yeah. And I'll tell you how I got it wrong all the time is if you think about what I sold, sales training, technically anybody could quote unquote need sales training. Like everybody could make their reps better. And that was my mindset, right? I was like going in, I'm like, this is the world's best sales training. You should totally love it because, okay, there's a million other things I could buy that are not sales training, which don't require hearing all my sales reps bitch and moan about having to sit in a classroom for 8 hours. But I wasn't thinking like, I was thinking like a seller, not like a buyer. And so what I failed to appreciate and what I've since come to learn is before anybody buys a solution, they have to agree that that problem is worth solving and worth solving right now. And those are two different things. I can sit here and say, it is worth training my sales reps to be better at sales, but it is not worth it right now. And I was not distinguishing between those two. So I would get happy ears coming off of a call where they're like, yeah, this is really cool. And I'm like, they're totally closing. Except they weren't because they're like, actually, we're going to like reorganize instead. Or actually, we're going to bring in a new leader. Actually, we're going to do whatever else. And I just wasn't giving them the opportunity to have an honest conversation with me that this is not something I am dead set on doing. And that's particularly prevalent in like outbound where they have not even raised their hand that they want it.
Sorry, I'm taking you all over the place. But I'm going to go back into the previous piece was for a quick hot second is, so you've built an impressive social media, I'll say LinkedIn presence. You also do some really cool, quirky, fun video content. What would be one or two, based on your lived experience, advice that you would give to people on how to build an audience on, let's say, LinkedIn and what you've already done?
I like this question because I just answered this earlier today from someone in my DM. So I got an answer. One is tonality. I think there is this trend happening right now where everybody's trying to be Elon Musk in their tone, meaning like, you got it wrong. And this is dead. And this is absolute. And it's like, bro, you ain't Elon Musk, all right? You can get away with doing that stuff. We ain't him. And so I think tonality-wise, If you go back and look at all of my posts, and I try my hardest, I'm sure I screw up from time to time. What you'll notice is when I'm talking about problems, I'm never pointing a finger. I'm never like, you're writing emails wrong. You're doing sales wrong. You are doing, because it's so accusatory. And think about why people are there on social media to begin with. It's often to learn. It's not to be like barked at. And so one of the like really specific tips I give people is if you're going to point out a problem, a flaw, use we, I language. Don't use you language because it removes this, which is awkward, right? So that's number one. Number two is so many people just feel pressure to like, okay, I've got to post every day. No, you don't. You, in retrospect, I could have grown faster had I just been smarter about commenting in places where I knew my buyers were going to learn. So like, I know a lot of sales leaders love Josh Braun. If I was dropping insightful comments on Josh Braun's stuff, probably would have been way better than me like scratching out posts every single day for the first 2 years. So that's number two. And then number three, again, something I wish I would have been better at sooner. I think sometimes we feel like we have to act like this like massive professional, like I'm a, you know, wise Yoda on LinkedIn, but it's a social media platform. Like people go there as much to learn as they do to be entertained. And so if you can laugh at a problem in a way that's not laughing at the person, do that. If you can make a joke about it, like do that. Those are the comments I leave that always get the most traction. Because I think it separates you from everybody else out there who's just like, well, my opinion is this. So just be your, as cheesy as it sounds, I think just like be yourself.
I think that, I think because what we are also kind of, this could be something that you're already aware of, is that when somebody sees this, they're like, they're already imagining what this person would be like to work with.
Yes. Yes. It is a movie trailer to the experience of what it's like to be on a call. If I see someone commenting and they're like, great point, like our solution is the number one, I'm like, oh my gosh, this person is going to pitch me to death if I speak with them. If I see someone who's like having a good time, like you did this with me. You sent me an email with like making fun of or making like laughing with me at a post I wrote about like sales and dating. And it stood out because I'm like, one, you didn't say I was reading your post. You just, you said something that told me without saying it, you were actually watching. And I'm like, okay, this person gives a shit. They care. And then that like earns the trust. And so I want to talk to people that are fun, they're smart, they're engaging. I don't want to talk to a pitch deck. And I don't think many people do.
Okay, so we've covered a whole bunch of different topics, but primarily thinking about how to get in front of your client, how to show up. What are some basic hygiene 101 things that you want to consider? Avoid those rookie mistakes, and then how to consider your social media presence, tonality being how you show up, and that also demonstrates what it's going to be like to work with you. And then finally, the I think one of my favorite things as well is going into the comment section. There's already people there in the bushes. Just go hang out with them, right?
Stealing that. People in the bushes. I love that.
Is there any final word or comment that you would want to add or put a ribbon on what we've been talking about?
Yeah, I would, because I'll say it's something I struggled with for a long time, and it relates back to what we were talking about with outreach. No matter who you are, where you are in this world, take your cold email and just cut 50% of the words off of it. I guarantee you don't need them. Like, if you were like me, you're writing novels hoping someone cares, they don't. The best, single best thing you can do is just shorten your email, because then it forces you to be focused. So I'll leave it at that.
By the way, I learned a really smart thing from Josh Braun. I know I'm like, we're acting like fanboys of Josh Braun.
That's okay. I'm
and
a
this
girl.
And this has been working really well for me as well. It's like, even if somebody says, go fuck off, like unsubscribe or like stop emailing me, right? At that point, when I respond, I'm like, no worries. I've removed you from my outreach. But I was just checking out this, and this is, by the way, I reach out. Anyways, have fun, you know. And some of those have actually turned into clients. I'm like, what? Anyways.
I love that.
Yeah, just take it on the best ride. Have fun. Yeah. Okay, so this activity I do with all my guests, and okay, it's 3001 questions all about me. You pick a number between 1 and 3001, and there's a question at the end of it.
701. I don't know why I picked it. It just came to me. It doesn't mean anything.
I'm not judging.
Probably how many deals I've lost to writing that pretty notes.
Okay. Okay. Okay, wait. 681.
Okay, this is fun. I like this.
Well, I'm kind of awesome, so.
I would agree with that.
Oh, wow. Okay, so here's your question. What would be a funny answer to the last serious question somebody asked me? It can't be me, by the way.
What would be a funny answer to the last question someone asked me? Oh my gosh, this is hard. So someone just asked me what I was doing tonight, and I said I was going to dinner with my friends. You're exposing me for now how not funny I am. No, it's all the walls are coming down. I mean, I guess I could say like I'm staying at home writing cold emails all night long. That's what I think people think I do on Friday nights. Does that count? I don't know.
I wouldn't be surprised if you were channeling David Attenborough while writing those emails. You actually put in the first, like, cue David Attenborough, low FM DJ voice.
Yeah, I'm walking around the neighborhood just, like, stealing dogs and bringing them into my house. So I keep growing, like,
These are all adopted.
Yes. Won't mention from who, but they're adopted.
Yeah, next time you adopt them, take the tags off.
Oh my gosh, this is fun. This is a lot of fun.
Yeah, this was definitely a lot of fun. And so for the people who've stuck around till this point of the conversation, past all the funny dad jokes, is where can they find you? And how would you actually like them to reach out to you?
Oh, great question. So LinkedIn, obviously, Jen Allen Knuth. I have a terrible website. It's demandjenwithaj.com. So if you ever want to see what a solopreneur bad website looks like, you can go there. And I would prefer they reach out to me with the things that I shared today. Like, have a point of view on something that I shared, have an opinion about something, make it personal. Don't make it, saw your episode, loved it. Anyway, here's what I want. There's just so much of that. And I don't think it helps any of us stand out.
Love it. Thank you, Jen. This was a lot of fun. Learned a lot. I'm sure there's a lot of great takeaways for the people listening. And for the people that do go to Jen, let her know that Paul sent you.
Yes, please do. Get that attribution.
I'll include my referral link.
Thank you seriously for having me. This was a blast.
Yeah, same. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.